Hi, this is Kalina.
And this is Gabe.
Welcome to
Bigger Than Love. Hey, y'all. Welcome to the better... What's it called? Oh, Bigger Than Love.
I really like what's it called.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Bigger Than Love podcast. Today's an interesting day because I'm going to be taking the lead and asking Kalina some questions.
Thanks for having me on our podcast.
So my first question for you is, where did your love of movement start?
Like many of us, I've been moving since before I really had a language for it. I've always been really loud and big with my gestures, whether it be the way I enter down a hallway or down a sidewalk or even in the grocery aisles. I was always trying to perform, and I just had an instinct for movement. I used to be obsessed with bodybuilding competitions that used to have on TV where they, I don't remember what they were called, but they would have people dressed up in like the 80s fits and they would do choreographed dances, but in between like dance moves, they would be doing push-ups and then making like a bicep curl. And as early as I can remember, I was trying to come up with my own versions of that and put together shows with my sister and like choreograph that. Funny story, one time, I guess it was maybe like 9 or 10, and my sister Lauren, I convinced her to put together like one of these performances that my dad was gonna have to set through whether he liked it or not. And we went downstairs into the basement of our old house to like rehearse. And in the basement of our house, there was this pipe that was across the laundry room that was a water pipe. And I got the idea that we should jump up and like do like a pull up. And somewhere along the rehearsal, like I put my sister and myself up there and we broke the water line and we like flooded the basement. So it's a really funny memory with my sister, but then also a funny early childhood memory of trying to like put a dance together. But dance was definitely my first path where I felt free and focused. And I came to dance through the same kind of generic dance school that like every girl that I know went to, where you like sign up for dance and you do like tap, jazz, ballet, and gymnastics or whatever, and you go like twice a week. And I didn't know it then, but movement was how I processed the world. I've always kind of had a lot going on in my head and my heart, and dance and eventually theater became a place for me to kind of process that. When I felt confused or when I felt the world was hard or challenging, I could escape, and that was really important to me. And I've always really been fascinated with watching bodies move and like watching people move. I remember one of my early memories was watching my great grandmother. She had really big wingspan, like her arms, and she used to bake, but she would wear sleeveless shirt. But when she was baking or like kneading dough, like her arms would move. And I was so fascinated by that. I thought it was like such a beautiful thing to witness. I was just mesmerized. I don't think that that curiosity ever really left me. And over time, that love of movement expanded into yoga and dance. And in the last probably 5 to 7 years, more nervous system work and not just how we move, but why we move. Why are we moving the way that we're moving? And what's underneath that? What's asking to be felt behind the movement. So yeah, movement's always been my first language. I do talk a lot, but I'm not that great at it. I definitely like to move. And I think I knew more about movement before I really knew myself.
Hearing your sharing reminds me of the connection between yoga and movement. Had you asked me, say before we met, was yoga and modern dance, did they play in the same sandbox? And I would say no. But now after years of co-creating together, I can definitely understand dance in your yoga classes. When was the moment you knew you wanted to teach?
So I have a funny sharing when you asked me that question. It's a two-part. You didn't ask, but I'm going to tell you. So when I was a kid, I guess middle school, maybe 7th or 8th grade, they had us take this test that was through a series of questions. We were supposed to be told what jobs we would be really good at as adults, what we should pursue as a career. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what the test was called, but I was always a pretty analytical kid and being like, this is going to be the day I find out about the rest of my life. Like, I was really serious about it, and I was desperately hoping that the results would come back and it would say Broadway star or, you know, something poetic, you know, like a ballerina dancer or whatever.
Astronaut.
Yeah, like an astronaut. At the very least, a preacher. I had this burning desire to be like a preacher, which I was told I couldn't be a preacher because I was a girl, but we don't need to go there. So I really was excited to get these results. And I think it felt like 6 months before we got these little pieces of paper back. But I remember the day we got it back, we were sitting at our desk and they handed a little perforated, kind of like when you get a check in the mail and you have to like pull the little paper off the sides. And I remember being so nervous. What's it going to be? And I opened it and at the very top, it said teacher. And then after that, it was doctor, lawyer. And I remember immediately being very devastated. I don't want to be a teacher. I don't want to be that. So lame. And the kid that was two desks up from me, he was like, yeah, because he got in like TV talk show host or something like that. Like, I can't remember. And I was like, what? Like, I don't even like talking to him at lunch. Why did he get that cool career? And I remember really being bummed out about it, so much so that my teacher at the time asked me to stay after class because I guess I was noticeably upset by the results or whatever.
Uh-huh. That you're going to be a teacher being consoled by your teacher.
Yeah, basically. And I remember her saying, like, you know, why are you so upset? And I was like, I don't want to do this. And she said, well, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. Mm-hmm. But it's also important that you recognize what your gifts are.
Interesting.
And
that's some good teaching right there.
And I remember being like, whatever, like a preteen kind of reaction. So I remember the moment that I decided I didn't want to be a teacher very, very vividly. But the truth is, long before I ever did that test, way before middle school, I was teaching. Uh-huh. I don't remember a time that I wasn't. Even as a kid, when we go to church, I started helping out with Sunday school. And at home, I would put together like a fake test and make my sister take it. And like give her a grade and be like, you got a 62% or whatever. And she'd be like, what? You know, like these pretend tests. And even by the time I was in middle school, I was already teaching dance classes and like doing stuff at the theater. And so, and I was the oldest of my siblings. And I think that when you're the oldest, I don't want to speak for all oldest siblings, but I know for me in my life and also quite frankly, like with my parents, I was always in kind of a teacher role, always had that attitude of, well, let me show you how you could do that better. Or let me show a different way. It's just kind of been built into my personality, mm-hmm. but it really had to be forced. Even my first yoga class, I like got forced into that, which I mean, I don't know if you're going to ask me about that later. I don't think I really accepted the role of teacher until I was really into my late 20s, honestly, even though that's what I was doing and it was my primary job and it's how I made my living. I think there was a long journey of acceptance because there's so much pressure what comes with that. You know, mm-hmm. people are looking to you and there's a vulnerability and you're kind of letting your life constantly be on display and people are asking you questions. And when people ask you questions, kind of have to have an answer, right? Mm-hmm. Or at least be vulnerable enough to say, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. And I think that took some time for me to really accept.
It's interesting to hear your internal dialogue, or again, the inner machinations of what modalities you work with as a teacher. This plays into my next question is, what do you believe people are really seeking when they come to class?
So I think when people come to class, they really just want to feel held and seen. I think that can be with the way that you move around the space, maybe knowing students' names. But really, even beyond that, I think students want to feel supported because we don't always feel that like in our everyday. For some people that come to the student, and I think that this is especially true post-COVID. I don't have any statistics to back this up. It's just my personal opinion. But now more than ever, after pandemic and people working from home and like are people sitting at desk all day, when they come to class, it might be the only time that they're really having any social interaction outside of work. And so there's this element of, I just want to be seen, held. I want it to be okay for me to just be me. I don't think that a lot of students are really looking for anything more profound than that. And that's pretty profound when you think about it, like, oh wow, like I can just be me and like I'm going to be accepted. And I also think there's an element of wanting to have a little bit of fun and like breaking the rules. And there's some joy there, like when you're in class and the teacher's like, okay, you can exhale out through your mouth, or like you can make a sound or clap or like giggle or whatever, or tell a joke. There's like this communal kind of release of just like, oh wow, I can just like be alive and I don't have to question like every move I'm making.
How do you weave in nervous system work and stillness and weirdness all at the same time?
Well, for me, teaching isn't just about movement. I mean, that's why people come. They're like, oh, I'm going to sign up for this class and I'm going to kick my leg up in the sky or whatever. But it is about nervous system literacy. I'm always thinking about how does this moment land in the body? What's happening underneath the shape that my students are making? So I try to build classes that speak to the system underneath the skin, the subtle layers, the breath, the pacing, permission, and that can extend to just even how I invite people into whatever we're doing in class. And I use stillness a lot, especially in my more restorative classes. I think silence is a big part of that. As a teacher, you don't always have to be saying something. You can just let your students be there and like really be in embodiment and be in awareness of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it's the space where people actually get to feel, because the rest of the day is so busy with life. And this is a space where you can feel your bones, you feel your breath, you can feel fear if that's coming up, maybe softness, maybe love. I know sometimes I personally will feel just so overwhelmed with like my capacity to love, you know, like right when I think I can't love anymore, I can't care anymore, I'm over it, I'm burnt out, I'm exhausted. Then I'm in class and I'm like, oh my gosh, actually there's this whole other thing beneath. I just scratched the surface, right? Like it's, there's more there. And sorry, I'm getting like emotional. I don't know why. I like to invite that gently, but because I know how palpable that can be, to be like, oh wow, like whoa, I didn't know that that was there, and that you don't need to fix whatever's there, you can just notice it. Because I don't think any of us want to feel like we need to be fixed per se. Like, it's a horrible feeling when someone's like, well, what you need to do is, and you're just like, well, you need to shut up, you know, like at least that's my reaction to like most things. So from there, from that teaching place, the practice becomes something way more alive than just movement. And I think that's where the crossover is with dance and music and all creative pathways and yoga, is like, it's very much alive. It's always so different and so raw, and like, it's never the same. And depending on who's in the room and like all that, it's different. It's experience that really can't ever be recreated. And so it feels for a bubble in time, like you're in this unique experience, like even if it's a lunge, like, you know, over and over again, or a warrior one. To me, the weirdness, that's the medicine. The weirdness is the moment that everybody starts to laugh because someone's back made a fart noise when they were doing a roll-up. We're all pretending to be adults, right? Like, we're all like, oh, I'm a big kid now. But we're all waiting for that. We're waiting for permission to laugh and to be like, well, that was weird. Or when someone does something weird, like in class, or when I cue do what your body's asking for and someone just lies down and sighs. Like, it's just like, oh, you know, and it's, and everyone's like, whoa, are we allowed to do that? That's weird. But it makes it cool, right? And that's when we remember that it isn't a performance and it's not about being perfect. It really is a practice. And sometimes when you're practicing, weird stuff happens. And it's not wrong to come to the practice thinking like, oh, I'm going to learn how to do a handstand, right? That's great. And if that's how I can get you in class, please come. We start tonight at 6 p.m., you know. But really, it's about connecting to freedom. And that is so underrated, especially nowadays. What does it feel like to just be free for an hour? I've heard some teachers like, oh, our students be like, oh, I come here to check out. And it's like, no. Don't check out, check in. This isn't about detaching. This is about being like, yo, this is me. This is my meat suit. I'm in here. We like to joke all the time, like being a human is the hardest thing that I've ever done. And if I can't come here and let myself and my weirdness be the medicine, then like, what's the point of being alive, really? Because like, I can't get out of here. As long as I'm me, this is the me I am. That's what I look like. Baggy shirt, sweatpants, hair slicked back. This is what it is. And there's something really liberating about that, that at least as a teacher, I really want to create space where people can feel that, even if it's for a fleeting second. I mean, I hope you feel that way when you take class.
For sure. I really just feel more than anything else just in my body. I've been enjoying using the yoga practice just as a way to like get into the nooks and crannies. My next question is sort of staying with the emotional content of teaching, how your own healing journey informed your teaching.
Through the years of teaching, and I'm coming up on 23 years of teaching, I have been through a lot. Some of it just by chance, some of it by choice, just by decisions that I made. And the thing that comes up the loudest is when I was going through my divorce and I was feeling like a failure, but I was still showing up in teaching class. Looking back, how that healing journey of like accepting my current life as everything that I had known it to be up to that point was changing, and noticing how my identity identity was so wrapped up in being with my ex-partner and like what our life looked like and what I thought it was going to be and how that informed my teaching in real time really reminded me of something my teacher used to say is your teaching is going to be a reflection of what's going on in your life. So you better make sure that you keep showing up on the mat too. And for me, that's always been about more related to like how I'm moving through, for instance, the eight limbs. Like, am I being honest with myself? Am I being kind to myself, not him? So like, am I allowing myself truth? And how leaning into that in times where I'm healing myself. You know, I think that there's this misconception that I have to be 100% whole and healed to lead. And that's not true. And I'd say that my ability, not even ability, like my willingness to be vulnerable about what was going on in my life, I'm not okay, but I'm here and I'm happy to be here, really changed not only the way that I taught, but also how students responded to. Because it's like our students as teachers want to feel not alone, mm-hmm. right? We want to feel like, oh, wow, if that person can go through pain and still proceed and grow and learn and come out on the other side better and healed, then like, I mean, healed, are we ever really 100% healed? But you know what I mean? Like, come out on the other side. And that means there's a potential for me too. And like, I definitely try to live the practice and mm-hmm. I'm still healing. I mean, I think I used to believe that there would be some point where I'd arrive and I'd be like, okay, now I figured it out. Like, I genuinely believe that. I believe I would be like, I figured it out. But what I keep learning through my own healing and my own practice, the more I teach, the more I realize I'm a student too. Mm-hmm. And my relationship of being alive and as a teacher, I'm still learning how to trust silence and to not rush to feel in the spaces in my life. Like, even as an individual, it is okay to like take a day off. It gets okay. Stillness comes in a lot of different forms, and how to offer less sometimes. It's okay to just listen. That love isn't just about connection, it is about repair. And I think it's true in like our relationships with students too, about how we come back after hard stuff. I don't think that you learn that if you're not healing from something. How do you even learn that life is about repair if you've never had to repair anything? You've never allowed yourself the space to repair. And how we stay present even when things are messy, it's tough. I don't really know any other way to put it. I definitely think being in a state of repair has definitely influenced my teaching, and I would like to say for the better.
Yeah. Well, I'd say that we're the lucky ones who get to take your class and experience your mastery. So thank you, Kalina, for doing this interview today. We really appreciate it and appreciate you.
Of course.
Okay, one last question. Kalina, what's your favorite thing to teach?
I like teaching all my yoga classes, to be honest with you. I mean, I hate to pick one, but I'd say other than just teaching flow, because flow will always be like my kind of home, and I love to teach sequencing. I love just being in the creative process of teaching that. I really like teaching yoga movement, which has had a hiatus post-COVID, but it recently came back. And it's a lot of fun for me because it's a class I made up. Like, it's not like a class it's not like a class you get a training for. It's a way for me to kind of lift the scab of my past, of like my dancing years, and kind of merge yoga and dance together and like have fun. I mean, who doesn't want to pretend like they're a ballerina for an hour, you know? And I think the community really likes it too. It's a lot of fun, and Gabe DJs, and it's just really, really funny.
It's a good time.
It's a good time to just not take yourself so seriously, really. Because I feel like in the world of yoga and Pilates, like, we're just sometimes so serious, you know? Like, we have to be serious.
Understatement.
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun. But I think in general, I talked about how I didn't want to be a teacher, but now, like 42, like, I love everything that I teach, trainings and classes and whatnot. Thank you for asking all these questions. I'm feeling kind of emotional now, so we'll see how the rest of the day unfolds. But thank you for listening, those of you who are tuning in. And I am open to any questions. I hope that this podcast can continue to grow and I can speak as a teacher and help other teachers kind of grow their practice. So I am open to questions and or episode ideas that you have, things you want to hear about from me and also from Gabe. So we want to make it interesting for the listener. And yeah, thanks. Follow, subscribe, share, do all those fun things. And we'll see you next week.
Three P's. It's a third more piece.
It's a third more piece.